Starting your own private medical practice can be the most exciting and rewarding thing you'll ever do in your career, but at the same time, it can be so daunting. Where do you start and how? That's why Gentem Health put together the podcast series, Journey to Private Practice, where we document and interview entrepreneurs, clinicians, investors, and the best in the industry to bring you actionable insights as how to start, grow, and scale your private practice. With insights tailored just for you, and actionable links in the notes, this is the Journey to Private Practice.
Hey, podcast listeners, this is Omar M. Khatib, head of growth here at Gentem Health with another episode of Journey to Private Practice. I have a very special guest today, someone who I first heard about on a Joe Rogan podcast in an extremely heated, insightful, and interesting debate about meat versus vegan. Dietary plans. He's someone who has a fantastic brand and obviously an amazing reach. And that's Dr. Joel Kahn. Dr. Kahn, thank you so much for joining the podcast. Looks like you have a beautiful day over there in Detroit.
Yeah, we're having summertime. You know, we pay the price, but it was supposed to rain all week, and it's been like this, 85 and sunny all week. So if anybody has talent, go into the weather prediction business because you've got a lot of opportunity right now. They're failing to get it right. It's a beautiful day. I live on a small inland lake. There's a lot of them in Michigan, so having water in your backyard is heaven for 4 months a year.
That's not bad at all. So before we get into today's topic, which is, you know, how did you get to a point of getting on the planet's biggest podcast, which is the Joe Rogan Show, and more importantly, how did you exactly prepare as a physician to go on such a, you know, high level podcast to have essentially a debate, and you did it in a very respectful way. And more importantly, in a way that you did not back down, you know, and you educated your audience and, in my opinion, influenced many of them. But before that, I want to hear your origin story. Like, who is Dr. Joel Kahn? Where are you from? How did you get into medicine? And how did you get to where you are today?
Yeah, and I'll keep that short and sweet. And, you know, at age 62, I'm very lucky with the practice I have, which is relevant to your business. But let me get to that real quick. I grew up in suburban Detroit. I had a murmur as a child, a little noise. My mother started taking me to a pediatric cardiologist. It never proved to be anything. But by age 10, if you said, what do you want to do? I would have said, I want to be a heart doctor like Dr. Green. I thought it was all pretty cool stuff. Of course, they never had a cut on me or hurt me. If that was the case, I probably would have become a plaintiff attorney and sued them all. But I had a good experience with docs. By good fortune, two things happened when I was 18. I grew up in a home where we kept kosher, didn't eat ham, pork, cheeseburgers. And when I attended the University of Michigan, I converted to a vegetarian, vegan, everything but me, because there wasn't any other option. And I've never altered that path. So I'm a 44-year plant-based eater. I'm still alive, very healthy, very grateful for that. But in the field of cardiology, that proved to be quite a good move. And I got into med school at age 18 in the rapid track program in Ann Arbor. So I got through all that stuff and I was, you know, in practice by age 29 as a cath lab interventional cardiologist, stents, heart attacks. But I was plant-based the whole time and I was teaching people. One thing happened in 1990. Dr. Dean Ornish published something called the Lifestyle Heart Trial. But a research study came out that whole food, plant-based eating combined with meditation, stress management, exercise, quitting smoking, had this powerful impact on heart arteries. So I had this funny dual track, and I was in private practice. I had a fight. I went to big university programs where they were grooming you to get your PhD and academic tracks, which is wonderful stuff. But I didn't want that. I did everything I could to stay clinical. And so I've always had a university appointment. I'm a full professor of medicine at Wayne State University. I teach students. I want a private practice. I'm a capitalist. Sorry. I believe if you own your own garden, you grow more fruits and vegetables than if the government owns the garden. And I've been in a variety of situations, but always private practice, which is expensive and risky and, you know, uncertain. But, you know, I worked harder than most, to be honest. I knocked on doors like crazy to introduce myself when I started practice, and it paid off. So, you know, I had done local TV in Detroit. That's another story. But I had been on 2-3 times a month with their local Fox News channel talking about health. I'd written a lot of blogs. I'd written two or three books already. Practice was picking up. You know, and everybody kind of hopes to be on national TV. I did not have an agent. And in the summer of 2018, I was in New York City, and I reached out via Instagram Messenger or something to John Joseph. John Joseph, you know, at that time, a 55-year-old punk rocker, the Cro-Mags, big-time plant-based athlete, big social following, had written a few books. And we met for breakfast and had a green juice and just hit it off. He's a Lower East Side kind of legend, a real tough upbringing. He'd been on Rich Roll podcast many times. I had been on three times or so by then, talking about plant-based science. And we hit it off. And it turns out a week or two later, he was on Rogan. I don't know how that happened. And they, as it would be expected from Joe Rogan, they talked about veganism for 5 minutes, and they talked about punk rock and athleticism for the rest of the 90 minutes. But Rogan apparently turned to him and said, "You know, who do you know in the doctor world? I want to debate, you know, paleo versus vegan, and I want a really high level." And maybe just I'm the last vegan doctor that Joseph had run into, because he knows lots of them. He goes, "Joel Kahn, you got to reach out to Joel Kahn." So I was at a plant-based meeting in Asheville, North Carolina with Rip Esselstyn, and I get an email, and it's like, friggin', it's not Joe Rogan, it's his assistant. You know, we're inviting you on. And I was like dancing all over the place. I was not a big Rogan fan. I hadn't listened to 3-hour podcasts, but everybody knows who Joe Rogan is, of course. And they gave me about 6 weeks to be in LA, and I'm a student. I mean, I got through med school, I got through residency, I got through fellowship. I'd written books. So I really dug in to say, I had two goals, and you did very kindly hit on one of them. I did not want to be the angry vegan. I did not want to slash and burn Rogan for being a hunter and eating meat. I did not want to destroy my opponent, who actually comes across as a gentle soul, Chris Gresser. He's pretty tough and pretty cocky, really. You know, there was a 1-2 punch to my appearance. I'll tell you about it in a minute. I wanted it to be scientific, but understandable to the public. I just didn't want his crowd to turn that podcast off and say, "There's another asshole vegan." Because we know that's common.
And I would say,
well, I appreciate you saying that, because, you know, because of, and I think I mentioned, we had a little interruption in the video here, this courtroom appearance, you know, and just, and your own personality. I mean, I can control my temper 99.9% of the time. I can take a punch, and I don't have to punch back always. God knows, an imperfect human being. So I had about 6 weeks, and I knew of a series that you can still watch on YouTube called plantpositive.com. And a mysterious person, never revealed, created about 180 YouTubes on the history of why plant-based eating was an advantage. And I'm talking about this guy, whoever he is, had dug out references from the 1860s and 70s and 1910, stuff nobody ever sees. And it's there for everybody. And I had been through watching every single one of those YouTubes, you know, a couple years earlier. I think they were put up around 2010, 2011. So I said, I'm going to go through those again. And then I found some other resources online. I knew the topic was going to, you know, be over the biochemistry of meat, saturated fat, healthy, unhealthy. This is a debate that's been raging in the scientific world, very much influenced by money from big food, big pharma. Saturated fat does matter, doesn't matter. And really, I had hundreds of medical articles. I had this series of YouTubes that in themselves often had 20, 30 medical references. I actually, if anybody goes to, and this is not a promotional statement, but I have a website, drjoelkahn.com, drjoelkahn.com. There's a red box there. I haven't taken it down. My notes to prepare for the Joe Rogan podcast, because it actually is in and of itself an amazing library of other people's
work. And I'll link that in the comments.
Research work.
Hey, podcast listeners, I want to share a story with you. Now, believe it or not, my father was a private practice owner just like you. He had his own general surgery practice for 35 years and spent the last 10 doing varicose veins and other vascular procedures in his office. He loved private practice because he was in control of how he practiced medicine. But even back then, billing was an issue. Now, despite that, my father was lucky to choose when he wanted to retire, and he did so with his independence as a clinician and a practice owner. But not everyone is lucky like that these days. That's because getting reimbursed is even more complicated than ever. Practicing medicine today comes with more headaches and more responsibilities. So along with the complexities and demand of caring for your patients, your mind is also occupied with all these headaches that come with running a private practice, like submitting claims and managing your accounts receivables, dealing with insurance companies and denials. All of that just to get reimbursed in time and in full. And more often than not, that doesn't happen that way. And this can be such a tough task and extremely frustrating, but it does not have to be like that anymore. To adapt in a world with an ever-changing environment, especially in healthcare, means to seize opportunities when you see them. And that opportunity is to use data-driven technologies. That's why you need a trusted partner like Gentem. Gentem is a Silicon Valley-based company founded by a Stanford-educated physician and a former Facebook software engineer. And they found that uncovering hidden revenue in your claims is the key to increasing your cash flow and staying independent. It's only possible through what's called predictive reimbursement modeling, and that's on Gentem's platform. Why is that important? Because then you're using the power of data to see how well your practice is doing, how to maximize reimbursements, decrease the time it takes for you to get reimbursed. More importantly, as payers get more creative with denials, you are able to use the data to adapt and stay ahead. And not only that, but you also get the support of Gentem's remarkable team of medical practice experts with decades of experience in healthcare. They're an extension of your practice in that they work with all departments to achieve optimal revenue with dedicated resources, including certified billers, coders, and revenue cycle managers, all working and paying attention to the data specific to your region and your specialty. Gentem also develops products specifically made for private medical practices. So when your practice is ready to invest in hiring more staff, perhaps new technology, or even acquiring a facility or building one out yourself, don't go and fill out a long, complicated application at the bank and get handcuffed to a high-interest bank loan. Gentem uses Gentem Advance to essentially advance payments to you based on your outstanding AR. You get the capital that you need today to grow, and then you pay it back based on your future claims.
So head over to gentem.com/podcast demo and get your free billing and reimbursement assessment along with a demo of our platform and service to see what's right for you. And now let's get back to the show.
Yeah, blog work, this plant positive secret individual who did all this work, quirky work. And knew also, nobody can know everything. I mean, I could, and I'll just say less, it wasn't clear. We weren't told to bring PowerPoints and actual articles. I figured I did have a laptop with me when I met Chris Kresser at Joe Rogan's studio. At that time, it was in the valley of L.A., Woodland Hills, I think it was. Now he's in Austin. He's moved. But we knew we would have laptops, and I could access that reference on my own website if I needed. Turns out Chris Kresser had been on the show before and brought some PowerPoints, and there was an opportunity to put him up there demonstrate. So he was technologically a little bit more advanced, but there you go. And at the end of the day, you know, how many people did you really influence? Did you really change your mind? So that's how it happened.
So In leading up, it sounds like you started with sort of a large body of work of just research. From there, did you kind of narrow it down to say, here's the areas that they're probably going to ask about and debate me on? So I should have at least a go-to reference or some, because what I found about your answers was that, you know, you did not skip over specific details. You shared the reference, why it's important, the body of work, right, and how it translates, which was great for an audience who's non-scientific. For me, I have the luxury that halfway went through med school, so I at least knew what you were talking about, but most people don't. And I thought you did a very good job of doing that. How did you get to that point? Because that's a lot of information.
Right. Well, I based my approach because you always learn on the shoulders of giants. I have a lot of respect for a professor at University of Southern California, Dr. Walter Longo. And he has a wonderful book called The Longevity Diet, 2018. And he has this little construct. I mean, this is one of the most eminent research professors on nutrition in the world. And he says, you know, one study doesn't ever shift the entire world's perspective on any topic, vitamin C, sunshine, radiation, whatever. He goes, it's the entirety of the literature. Have respect for all those that contributed to literature. And he breaks it down. He calls it the five pillars of longevity. What's the biochemistry that suggests, in this case, is meat healthy or not? What's the biochemistry say? And we can talk about TMAO and saturated fat and NuFi GC. These are technical terms. What do the randomized studies say? Well, very often in nutrition, there's very few really good large randomized studies. They're hard to do. What does the epidemiology say? That's where people kill each other, because epidemiologic studies are very much based on who's included and what are the criteria and who's excluded. You can twist things if you really want to. What do old people do? It's called centenarian studies, blue zone studies. You know, are blue zones meat heavy, paleo kind of communities, or are they more plant forward based communities? And they are more plant forward based. None of them are fully vegan. And then he talks finally about big picture, what's good for the environment, what's good for the world population. And obviously there's issues there about meat and plants in terms of environmental sustainability. So I came in with that construct. There happens to be a Nobel Prize winning physician I trained with, Michael Brown. He won the Nobel Prize on cholesterol and statins in 1985. And I was in Dallas at that time training as a cardiologist. He has exactly the same construct. He calls it the four foundations of science. And maybe it was too high level. And, you know, what I clearly got pushed around was, why are you talking about the 1960s? Why don't you tell us about the latest study? And I mean, I think I stood my ground as good as I could in that situation, because really on a topic like nutritional science, particularly, it's built on generation after generation, generation of science. And some of the best studies on, for example, you add saturated fat to your diet, more butter, more egg yolk, more cheese, what's going to happen to your cholesterol? Those studies were done in the 1960s, what are called metabolic ward studies at the National Institute of Health. There's over 390 of them. They've been lumped together in the late 70s in a meta-analysis. You can't do that stuff again. You don't want to do that stuff again. You don't need to. So, I mean, you know, if you don't get the foundation, you're not going to build a very strong house, which is basically, I probably could have said that more eloquently. And Chris Kresser was talking to the latest study and the Australian study. And no, actually, there were studies he mentioned I didn't hear of, because no human being has that, you know, artificial intelligence to do that. And I think he clearly misrepresented some of the studies. But at the end of the day, you know, the point was made, because as you know from having watched episode 1175, we probably spent the episode went almost 4 hours. So typically it's a 90-minute podcast. We were on 3 hours and 45 minutes with no bathroom break. Everybody was well-behaved overall. We spent 2 hours on one topic, saturated fat. What's the big deal? And, you know, Rogan was actually in a bad mood and poor health that day. He had had knee surgery that morning and was still under a little bit of a sedative. And really, it was like, you know, his WWF role. So you heard what he said. What do you think? You heard what he said. What do you think? I mean, it wasn't necessarily his most insightful questioning back and forth. But, yeah, you're right. Ultimately, I think it was seen by 20, 30 million people. Now, when I say it was a 1-2 punch, and that was not organized, Rogan, and I'm not sure why, invited James Wilkes. He's often called Lightning Wilkes. He is the athlete that was featured and produced the Game Changers movie 2019. And he invited him on with Chris Kresser to keep the conversation going. And probably appropriate for a cage fighter, a very educated cage fighter, background, Wilkes was at Kresser's throat. And just did what I couldn't do and come away as a sophisticated, reasonable physician, James Wilkes isn't a reasonable, sophisticated physician. He's a trained killing machine that's converted himself into a pretty good plant-based advocate. And he somehow added a little to the luster that I had been on, because turned out many of Chris, and I like Chris Gresser, I'm not about putting him down, but many of his arguments were pretty weak and pretty spurious when you really look at the entire
data. And I got pulled.
So Wilkes was pretty impressive. If anybody had the fortitude to watch those two episodes back to back, which probably would be about 6 hours of audio or YouTube. It's not YouTube, it's Spotify. I don't know where you find Rogan right now in terms of his videos, but it would be a real education.
And I got to point out a couple of things, because this is essentially what made me want to like reach out to you. Was one, you know, it's over a very contentious topic, and I thought that you did a fantastic job, you know, in your preparation of coming prepared to reference things and not sort of speak in generalities, like so many people say, like, oh, this one study. It's like, well, when was the study done? What was the basis of it? You know, you did a fantastic job there. Plus, the part that I think a lot of physicians can learn from, it doesn't matter whether you're into vegan or meat diet, you know, whatever, just learning from your interview, which was you called things out and pushed back, but in a way that did not make you seem weak or threatened or was disrespectful to Chris or Rogan. And I thought that was very much like, I feel like it's an art form in terms of intellectual debate, you know?
Yeah. You know, I think it's very unlikely I'll ever get invited back on Rogan. I'd like to, just to talk about heart disease and heart disease.
Why don't you think you'll be
and Hunter's heart
disease? Why don't you think you'll be invited back on?
You know, I don't think he enjoyed the whole experience. I really don't know. But I appreciate your comments. You know, did it change my life to be on Rogan? I mean, it is, so many people have seen it. And a lot of 27-year-old CrossFitters come up to me and say, "You're, dude, you're the guy." You know, it's fun. Has it built my practice? No. Most of my, you know, people on Medicare don't really know who Joe Rogan is.
But I think the value of it,
you know, and it didn't lead to any big Hollywood contract. You know, a lot of times these one-time wonder appearances. I was on Dr. Oz once. You know, that doesn't change your life. You know, when you have your own.
And I think that's important to note.
But nonetheless,
right, is that a lot of people see these things, right, you know, like going on Dr. Oz, going on Joe Rogan, everything. And the fact of the matter is, it's great. But it's not going to change things, and I think what's the wisdom in this interview was pointed out earlier, which is what actually makes a change in your practice and your business, whether you're a physician or not, is just being really damn good at what you do and letting the work speak for itself. Because it all started from a peer of yours who respected your work and talked about it, right?
I agree. You know, having a network, being involved in your community, would be now digital, be better if it were, you know, high touch community of going to charity events and other activities in the community. I mean, nothing replaces that. Obviously doing fine work, because it's always word of mouth is the most important. I happened to have hired a company a few years ago, and this is private practice. When my patients leave my office, they immediately get a text message to rate the visit. And this company distributes it on Google and Yelp and Health Grades. I didn't have that before. And, you know, now I have hundreds and hundreds of 5-star reviews. And they're authentic. I mean, I am blown away when I get a report once a week by the comments. I mean, you know, and then I'm aggressive. I share them all over my digital platform everywhere because I'm grateful for them. And they are ultimately the best marketing you can have is, you know, 5 stars and comments about the quality of the care. So, nothing replaces that.
As a physician, what platform do you personally feel like you spend the most time on because you know, you enjoy it the most, gain value out of it? Is it Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook?
Biggest following on Instagram. I lose people when I don't talk about broccoli and I talk about other critical matters. I don't announce who I'm voting for, you know, presidential races. But I talk about the need to protect freedom of speech, freedom of medical care, freedom of practice. But so Instagram, you know, is important to me. I built a very big LinkedIn following because I do executive health, executive
cardio. And you have a book on that, right? With a great title, by the way. What's the title of the book?
I do. Yeah. Dead execs don't get bonuses. You know, and it speaks to anybody, but it's the title is for that. I spend my most time on Twitter. I just find doctors have gravitated to have conversations
and fantastic
on Twitter.
Ones. Like, I've noticed,
you
jump on cardio Twitter a lot, cardio Twitter.
Yeah, I do that. And cardio nerds is some young students that do a really good job. But it's a little more gentlemanly. I used to, about a year and a half ago, I was like, it was like just a fight on Twitter all the time. But it was the saturated fat, paleo, meat, vegans. And I was getting beat up all the time. I don't really care. It's Twitter. Now it's evolved to really good science, vaccine science, COVID science, new cardiology trials. And it's a little more gentlemanly, even though there's very disparate views. So cardiology is a huge portion of Twitter. And just to tell people, too, you got to be aggressive. I noticed I was getting emails from something called MashupMD, MashupMD. I forget who they're owned by, DocWire or something, but kind of like some of the other platforms. I was getting an email a week from a few different docs. I reached out. There was a little place. Do you want to be an expert? So I now send out, and it's based on Twitter posting. I send out an email a week that I've learned how to craft for them, and it goes to 20,000 physicians, and it lets me speak to what were the 5-6 most important tweets that week of my 400 tweets that week, because I tweet a lot. I tweet all kinds of articles, all kinds of research, and I share all over. And it's really been a fun thing because I have very different views than most of the people that are posting through Mashup. And, you know, it's not, you know, if you have opinions and you don't have a platform, and what I do is I also repurpose. You wrote a blog for this site. Put it on your practice site. Put it on LinkedIn. 3 years later, change it a little bit, update it, and use it, you know, over here. You know, you can't possibly always be creating
material.
You can update and make
absolutely
it fresh. But repurposing is really key. So I repurpose my mashups. You'll see my mashup, which is emailed to physicians, copied by me into LinkedIn, copied on, and people actually have responded very, very strongly, positively to those emails because they're very, you know, they're 5 top science articles. People appreciate that I've, you know, curated
absolutely
that for them.
And I think, you know, that's the interesting thing, and that's what I really like is that, you know, so my father actually was a general surgeon for over 35 years, had his private practice, but you remind me of you know, the kind of medicine that I grew up, which was you're a physician, you owned your own practice, you're an active member in the community, you know, people look to you for advice, you know, and guidance. And I think you've done that in a way that scales, you know, through not only the podcast appearance, but obviously you've written books, you have a website, and then you're adopting. I mean, and look, you just said, you know, you're 6 years old, so you're not like fresh out of residency, but you are adopting these new channels. And learning them and learning them very well. And I think that a lot of physicians can
learn. I have to learn TikTok. I got to get my TikTok fingers now. Broccoli, kale, Brussels sprouts, cauliflower, squash. Yeah. You know, I haven't decided to dance to music yet. There's some things God did not.
You got to draw, you know, you got to draw a line somewhere, right?
I know. I see some funny stuff by lawyers and doctors on TikTok, and just stick to the other platform.
Yeah, no, and I think that's interesting, especially the concept that you can't just, whether it's a publication or, you know, making a video, you can't just put it out there once and just kind of leave it there, right? Because there's things that can be repurposed and used in a variety of ways. And I think what's interesting is that as a physician, if you do this well and you get in the discipline of doing this weekly and getting creative and not just, being patient, you kind of create a digital version of yourself in which can help educate people, because patients are taking online, right? And so either you, as the expert, as a physician, find a way to provide the correct narrative and information so so patients can make the right decisions, or somebody else will. Somebody else who is not a physician, who has their own biases and their own agenda, you know, and that's where you end up with a lot of misinformation. Quick, before you go, where can people find you?
Yeah, probably the best site. I have a central website, drjoelkahn.com, but it's drjoelkahn.com, and links to my practice, links to my social media, lots of blogs, a couple of clips from the doctors and Dr. Oz and things like that. Dr. Oz's birthday.
Oh, happy birthday, Dr. Oz. Man. Yeah. Well, perfect. Well, Dr. Khan, thank you so much for coming on. This has been another episode of Journey to Private Practice. I'm your host, Omar Khatib, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Journey to Private Practice. If you like the show, hey, help other medical practice owners like yourself discover it. Please leave us a 5-star review, say a few nice things, and if anything, send this episode to somebody else, because I don't know about you, but for me, anytime anything good has happened in my life, it's been as a result of other people helping me. So forward this on, pay it forward, and we'll see you next time.